All right, everybody, welcome to July 19th, 2020, 7 Tools Workshop. My name is Suzanne E. I'm a compulsive eater, and I am the moderator for this two-hour workshop. Please join me, and this is being recorded. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things that we cannot change,
the courage
to change the things that I can,
and
the wisdom to know the
difference.
I will.
Amen.
All right, I'm going to present our first speaker. She's going to speak on our first tool. Oh, before we do that, we're going to Marilyn is going to read the CA Help Concept, and then I have a small announcement. And there's a good reason why we're going to read the CA Help Concept, so please, everybody, listen to what it says. It's very important. Marilyn, would you like to unmute and read the CA Help Concept? It starts with
Thank you for asking me. The CEA How Concept. The Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How Concept has been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery a disciplined and structured approach. The CEA How groups have been formed in the belief that our disease is absolute, and therefore only absolute acceptance of the CEA How concept will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, the CEA How plan of eating, steps, traditions, and tools of recovery are not suggested. Rather, we accept them as requirements for our recovery. Meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the HOW of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the CEA How ideal will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. Each group also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun, through abstinence and the taking of the first three steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifest in this room. Amen.
Thank you, Marilyn. And before we get started, the reason why that is read is because in our CA How concept, it speaks of we accept the tools, the steps, and the traditions and the concept as requirements. They're not suggestions for us in this program. So what's going to happen is after each speaker, we're going to open it up for three questions. We have a timer for the first hour, which is B, and the timer for the second hour is Susie. And if we have more time for more questions at the end, then we'll do that. And it seems like there was something else. Oh, I'm going to do the order of the tools in the way that I remember it, Alt-Mass, abstinence, literature, telephone, meetings, anonymity, service and sponsorship, because that's how I remember it. So if it's out of order, please don't anybody freak out and yell out, you're out of order, or you forgot one. I haven't forgotten any. So our first speaker is Michelle, and Michelle is going to speak for 10 minutes. Michelle, how would you like your time? Please work it out with B.
Hi, 3, 3, 3, and 1. Okay. Hi, everybody. I want to welcome everyone. My name is Michelle, and I'm a compulsive eater and bulimic. And the tool that I'm doing is abstinence, so I'm going to read it. It's on page 39 in the Forever Abstinent book. It says, CEA How Abstinence, 3 meals daily, weighed and measured with nothing in between except sugar-free soda. So I know we read this at every meeting, but this is exactly how we are supposed to do it. The whole program is right here. No questions. It's self-explanatory. So it's 3 meals daily, weighed and measured, with nothing in between except sugar-free soda, no-calorie beverages, and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called in, and committed so we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. You know, and then basically, you know, it says if you need, you know, is recommended that you get your physician's or healthcare professional's approval. Some people have medical issues, so that is why that is done. And if you notice, it says written down. I write my food down. It says written down, called in. It doesn't say text it, email it, written down. There's something pen to paper when I write my food down. And I just want to say the current Forever Abstinent booklet, the date is on the front, 9/19. You know, I was using an old one for the longest time. And, you know, especially if you're sponsoring people, you need to know exactly what's going on because there's been multi-changes. You know, many changes. And a lot of people come in, you know, we question, why do we have to do it this way? You know, this doesn't apply to me. Well, on page 3 in the Forever Abstinent book, it says, with the formation of Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, Howe incorporated the idea by Father Downing in the early 1960s, reached fruition in a program based on a spiritual leap preceded by abstinence from the addictive substances. And, you know, basically on page 3, it's talking about how this food plan is because we're suffering from addiction. You know, we may not realize that when we come in, but this food plan is written so we don't have, you know, our addictive substances. And so now I'm going to move on. On page 5, it talks about CEA how it works. Ready, set, go. So basically, it's my responsibility, not my sponsor's responsibility, for me to read everything so I don't have to call and say, do I get this? Do I get that? Is this on the plan? Is that on the plan? Am I supposed to measure this? Do I get free flowing of this? Or do I not have to call in everything? It's all written, you know, in this booklet. So it is my Bible. It says, be prepared is one of the little things. There's a whole bunch of them. So your healthcare professional, don't do this alone. We weigh and measure our food. And it says, every day write down your food meal plan and discuss it with your sponsor. And then there's a blurb on medical abstinence on page 7. So where it gets confusing, you know, when I sponsor people is the food plans are all enmeshed together. There's the maintenance food plan, the first 30 days. So I read this totally from cover to cover, and I saw that it was all right here, but I didn't see it. On page 13, it talks about the first 30 days, tells you exactly what to do. And then on page 19, it talks about after the first 30 days.
3 minutes.
Thank you. And then on page 23, it talks about maintenance. But then the food plans are listed on page 27. So if you read the first 30 days, it tells you that you're going to be at Appendix A. And that food plan's on page 29. And then if you're in maintenance, it tells you which appendix you look at. That's Appendix B. So we don't go looking into the other, all these foods are not for everybody. That's why it's important for me to be able to study this food plan. So let me see, I took some notes. You know, it talks about condiments, exactly how much to have, when to have them, that they're not free, we need to call them in. So now I'm going to talk a little about myself. I came into regular OA in 1979. I came into Howe many moons ago. I am abstinent 9 years and 5 days short of 4 months. I'm really grateful for my abstinence. I found that I was able, I don't have the obsession very much. I remember in the beginning I had lunch with this girl and I said to her, you know, my sponsor's allowing me to do this. So that's when it gets, the program gets watered down if our sponsors start not following the food plan, because then I started not doing it exactly how it was written. And she was saying, sure, sure. Well, that wasn't how it is. So it's important for me that I follow this program, dot my I's and cross my T's. And it's important for me to sponsor people that way. And if I feel it's important for me to have respect for my sponsor and for my, and you know, to have respect for my sponsee, which means, you know, I give whoever I'm sponsoring a time slot. That is her time slot. I put that time aside. I'm not in the shower. I'm not drinking, you know, my coffee, eating my breakfast. I am sitting waiting by the phone. It's just important to establish that, because if that starts slithering through the cracks, I'm really not helping that person, and it's definitely, I'm starting to feel my self-respect and my self-esteem going down the toilet, and I cannot allow that. Oh, and sometimes if you feel that it's not working and it's time to part ways, it's okay. Sometimes there's so much we can learn from somebody, and we can't hear them anymore. But I've been with my sponsor for over 10 years. So I have a way that I weigh and measure my food. It is important for me to stay consistent, whether I cup it or whether I scale it, to not switch around, because then I'm making my own rules of I want more today, I want less today. I went to Ireland, and I took my food on the plane, and the tour guide leaned over and said, what in the world is going on here? Why do you have all that stuff? And I said, well, I'm in hell. Because I needed to break my anonymity for someone on this tour to know, so I could be not sneaking around. And he said, oh, I'm in hell too, but I just want to let you know I'm not following it. And I was like, cool, whatever you want to do, but just keep your eyes on me, you know. So whenever I couldn't communicate to the waiter, I'd communicate to him, and he'd explain it to them. It was, I stayed abstinent in Ireland. At Ireland, I did all my research. I had my cups, you know, I had my food for the plane, and for the next day, my breakfast on the plane. So I do everything. I remember coming back from Ireland, and they said, you know, we need to confiscate everyone's food, you know, when I was going to get on the plane, and I screamed out on the whole line of customs, I can't give you my food. I'm hypoglycemic, you know, and he said, I need to know where all this food's from. You need to read the label. So I'm on the line of the customs, and I'm screaming out, it says it comes from Trader Joe's. And he says, oh, okay, it comes from Trader Joe's. You can take it on the plane. I was hysterical, but, you know, when I handed over all of my certain things to the person at the gate, because, and she said, thank you so much, I don't get to leave to get food, so I appreciate it, I'm going to eat this. And with this COVID thing now, nobody's going to take any food that you offer them. I'd rather starve and eat somebody else's food. But, you know, anyway, I took care of myself. Whenever the bus stopped, I ran into anything that said grocery store and got fresh things and kept it on the bus just in case. And I took care of myself. And, you know, a lot of times I'd ask for things and they'd bring me this and I'd say, what is this? He said, this protein, which I can't say, it's laid by a chicken. And he says, it's dressed in a sweater. And I'm like, it's dressed in a sweater, you know, it was just like, you know, but as long as they gave me my pot of coffee, you know, it was cool, you know, so I just learned, thank you. I think that means I have a minute left, or I don't know what that means.
You have a minute left.
One left. Okay, thank you. So anyway, I weigh and measure my food. I call my sponsor. I take my food to work. Well, I have ways to heat it up, you know. Oh, I prepare in advance. That's another thing. If I'm going to a restaurant, which we're not doing these days, but I Google to see what the menu is, so I already know that they have stuff that I can eat. If it means having to have one of my things in the car or something before I go in, well, I do that. Anyway, the only thing I've taken in a restaurant is a grain, but I don't feel that I, you know, I don't bring food into a restaurant. And it's for me to question them, you know, like, what is this? I'm not supposed to have this. And they go, no, it's not wheat. And I said, well, what is it? And they called some foreign name, and I said, that's wheat. Take it back. So, you know, it's for me to just pay attention. So I don't know what I said, if I helped anyone, but I can tell you I'm abstinent over 9 years. I'm in maintenance. I'm available to help people. If it's not for those who want it. It's not for those who need it. It's for those who that are willing to do it. And thank you. My time is up, and I just want to welcome everyone, and thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. And we're going to open up for three questions. Please be brief. Please no telephone numbers during the recording, and we will still time at 3 minutes. So does anybody have a question for Michelle?
Yes.
I have a question.
This is Kathy, a compulsive eater.
Okay, and then I heard someone else. First, Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
Yes, I do have a question. How do finger foods fit in? Oh, do they take the place of a vegetable serving?
Hey, Kathy, that's a really great question. To this day, I don't understand that, so I don't deal with it. So I don't do it. When those things that are finger foods, I cut them up and put them in a cup because I don't understand how it just seems, and everyone that I've spoken to, it's like, I don't get it. Now, you know, in an emergency, let me see, what page is that on? Do you remember?
32.
Anyway, 32? Okay, thank you. His finger foods, three selections, but I don't know what that means. Does it mean three selections equal two cups? I mean, three selections equal one cup, so I don't deal with it. I just cut up my food, my stuff and put it in cups. So I'm sorry I can't help, but, you know, if I don't understand it, when in doubt, leave it out. Thanks.
Hi, Suzanne.
Thank you, Michelle, and that's what I do as well. Thank you.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
Hi, Suzanne. This is Ginger. I had the honor of being in a delegate when finger foods was discussed. And for clarification, it literally is. You can take three from any of those sections, and it counts as a vegetable. So that's how that, your vegetable serving. So that's how that was explained to me.
One vegetable serving or two vegetable servings?
Three selections is your vegetable serving. I would say it's two. I could be wrong, but that's what I would say. And then additionally,
okay, thank you very much. Any other questions?
I do. Mm-hmm. And so thank you very much, Michelle, for presenting all this information. And I also just wanted to point out on page 7, it talks about all changes must be consistent with the See How program, including weighing and measuring all foods and abstaining from sugar, flour, and quantity, except in the case of a serious illness or a life-threatening condition. And I just know that I've had sponsees who didn't realize that clause in it, because in the tools it just says all. Any recommendations your physician or healthcare professional makes will be accepted. So that really isn't a question. It's just clarification. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ginger. Any other questions?
Hi, Suzanne. It was Lynn. I came in with the other girl.
Okay, Lynn. And Lynn was first because I heard Lynn.
Can you hang on, please? I had qualification from a doctor, but he was more of a holistic doctor. And I remember he said to me that I needed to eat white flour. And I remember going to my sponsor and telling her that he told me to eat white flour. And she said, okay, fine. And I was eating bakery products. This isn't not just abstinence. And basically, he wasn't a real doctor, so I think that's when we have to be careful and make sure that the person went to a real physician. So I pulled the wool over someone's eyes on that one. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Lynn.
Thank you. I'm Lynn, compulsive overeater in recovery, 10 years, 5 months. What I got from your share is related to my last binge. I ran away from a commitment once. Michelle, it seems to me you show up for your commitments no matter how you're feeling. How long ago did you learn that, and do you usually feel better afterwards?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, even back in 1979 when I was in OA and I couldn't stay absent and I went to 3 meetings a day and I always had commitments and I always had a sponsor and I always did the writing. So I never not did it. I always did it because I knew that sooner or later this has got to click with me. So, wait, what's the rest of the question? Oh, yeah, do I feel better? Yes. The reason why I have commitments also is to get me to meetings. And a lot of times I would have, I remember when I couldn't stay abstinent, I said to this girl, and she was going to the gym, and I said, can you pick me up and take me with you? And she said, well, you could meet me there. And I said, that's not the point. The point is I need a babysitter so I don't binge. I need you to pick me up and just put me in the waiting room at the gym. I don't plan on exercising with you. I just basically, you know, so basically I felt better afterwards. Yeah, I always feel better afterwards because it's to get me there. When I don't have commitments, I don't really feel like I'm involved. I'm like I belong. So I have commitments, and that's how I feel like I belong, and I always feel better. Thank you.
We have time for one more question.
Good
morning, Miss Lily.
There was someone, Adele, there was someone else. Who is that?
Lily from Idaho.
Lily, go ahead.
Okay. I just needed to get something verified in my mind. So, in other words, what I got was that if you measure your vegetables, I'm taking that as an example, you always measure them. And then the next day, you don't revert back to weighing them because I don't see where it says that if you're measuring, you keep measuring, or if you're weighing, you just keep weighing.
That's just something that I do because I know I could mess with it. I want more food today, so I'm going to put it on the scale. I want less food tomorrow, so I'm going to cut it. That's something I do for the consistency of me not playing games.
Oh, I see. I see.
And that's something I always tell sponsee. Otherwise, I can play games. I want more food today. I want less food today. Now, I used to put everything on the scale, you know, all my salad stuff and everything. And literally, you know, I felt like I could have stuck my fist down my throat and thrown up at every meal. I felt so nauseous. I was like, how can I eat all this? So I decided for me that I cup it. It's easier. And also when I travel, I got the cups. And it's just so much easier. I can put the cups in my purse. You know, now when it comes to protein, I have to put that on the scale because, you know, that doesn't work for me to be cooking, you know, meats or fishes. You can't put those on a in a cup. Thank you.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm asking is because when I go on a trip, it's usually during the lunchtime, and I always, at home, I do measure my vegetables. But when I go on a side trip like this, I do weigh it because my next vegetable is liquid. And so my motive is not to get more, but to be within my vegetable count for that
right.
for that meal.
You have to remember, this is between you and your sponsor. This is my opinion. So I think, you know, everyone's got a different way of doing it. My way isn't gold. You know, read the food plan, everyone. And if your answer is not in the food plan, read it again and again and again. Eventually, the answer will appear and then discuss it with your sponsor. So I think our time is up. I really want to thank everyone who asked questions, and thank you for letting me participate. Back to you, Suzanne. Well, back
thank
to you, Vanna.
Hey, Suzanne, this is Adele. Coming from a place of love.
Yeah, we have to move on, so please be brief.
That's what I'm saying. We spent 28 minutes on the one question, so you've still got 6 people. Okay, love you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is how we decided to do it, so we're going to try. Okay, our next speaker is Shelley, and she is going to be sharing on our literature. Well, I hit Shelley. How would you like your time?
Hi, everybody. This is Shelley H. Can everybody hear me? Suzanne
yes.
is my...
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes. We can hear you.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Five, 4, and 1 would be amazing.
Okay, 5, 4, and 1.
That would be awesome.
Got it.
So how about everybody take a deep breath and hold it and exhale. Thank you so much. I'm Shelley H., bulimic, compulsive eater in recovery, and my abstinence date is January 2nd, 2004. I'm maintaining 28 pounds this abstinence, 75 down from my known top, up 10 from my known bottom, and I sponsor on all levels. I am not available. And my tool is literature and writing. We use the AA Big Book and the 12 and 12 of Tools of Examination and Release. Our writing assignments for the first 30 days are taken from them. When we substitute the word compulsive eater for alcohol and for alcoholic and food for alcohol, we feel we identify absolutely. We believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease, so we're learning one day at a time to abstain from negative thinking. And when I came in here, I was at my wit's end. I've been a compulsive eater my whole life. And when my sponsor told me to turn to the doctor's opinion, and I read a little excerpt from Dr. Silkworth, who treated Dr. Bob, says, the physician at our request gave us this letter and has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. He confirms that we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. And this is in the doctor's opinion. And then it goes on to say, the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, have lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up in them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. That was me. Women and men who drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol, the sensation is so elusive, they admit it is injurious, and that was me. I could not stop. They cannot over time differentiate the true or false. To them, the alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontent, and unless they can experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes by taking a few drinks. And that was me, because then the phenomena of craving develops again. Spree, remorsefulness, resolution not to eat again. It repeated over and over and over and over and over and over, and I was just beside myself. But when I heard this, I began to understand what was wrong with me. And all these, as many others, have one symptom in common. They cannot stop drinking without developing the phenomena of craving. It's a manifestation of an allergy which differentiates us from other people. And the only permanent eradication is entire abstinence. And the solution is outlined in this book. Well, when I heard that, I was like so excited. And so when you get the first 30-day questions, the questions begin for you to look at yourself and to examine what your life has been like. And then it goes into, and you get to begin to get a better understanding of yourself and the disease. And for me, it was just such a relief. And then it goes on. We have a chapter called There Is a Solution, and in there, it talks about the steps that we take, and it talks about, but the ex-problem drinker who has found the solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another compulsive eater, and that was me, because the person that was sponsoring me was someone who also had the same problem. And so I went to the solution, and I read it, and I did it, and throughout the 30-day questions, when I get to look at like the fatal nature of the disease and look at the solution and about believing in a power greater than ourselves, it really began to make self sense. And then there's a chapter, how it works. I mean, how easy is that? And it pinpoints it. It tells us what we have to do in order to be free of this malady. And then in the big book, there is something I call the ABCs, and I just, you know, it reminded me again.
5 minutes. And it's
on the thank you, on the bottom of page 43, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first bite. Well, that's me, except in rare cases. Neither he nor anybody else can provide such a defense. That's B and C, his defense can come from a higher power. And so throughout this book, it reminds me and gives me the courage to continue to go forward, and it shows me what I have to do. And writing, when I write and I put my hand on paper, I begin to understand. And when I write from my hand to the paper, it's from my head to my heart and to my God consciousness. And it gives me a release. It gives me a spiritual experience where I can really look at myself. And in this book, there's 147 hidden promises. But, you know, I really love this promise, and it's a four-step promise. And it says, as we persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born. And the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. And that's what the reading and writing does. And that's what it's done for me. My life, these promises have come true for me. I have a daily reprieve dependent on my spiritual condition, and that means writing and reading and weighing and measure and using all these tools. And I am one of those people. I love the big book. My big book is lined and numbered, and I have little things on the side so I know where everything is. And this big book with the solution and how it works and working with others has totally changed my life. And it's also helped me refrain from negative thinking, because when I go to that place of negative thinking, I know that that's not my God consciousness. And I'm very grateful being asked to share in this meeting and talking about the one thing that I love. And I found for me that the big book, reading in the big book, has really saved me. And also, you know, working all the steps. It is so important to work the steps. And you know, here on page 98, it talks about every man, he cannot get well. The only condition is he trusts God and clean house. And I learned how to clean house, to look at myself, to get rid of my resentments, to really look at myself honestly, hence the title of our fellowship, How, Honest, Open-Minded, and Willing. And I'm so grateful that I have a program that, you know, I used to have the bedevilment on page 52. Nothing was working for me. And then you turn to page 83, and the promises are there, and the promises have come true for me. I know I said that before. And I'm just so grateful for this program. It's shown me a way to live. It's given me a purpose. And I work this program like my life depends upon it. And I know today, you know, before when I was in the disease, it says I hung on to the idea most of my life I could just control the external environment. And the internal environment would then become comfortable, but that's not true. I've learned I have to work on the internal environment, and then everything else falls into place. And with that, I think my time should be about up, and I thank you for letting me be a part of this. We have another minute?
Yes, 1 minute.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love the third step prayer. I love all the prayers in this program, and I say like the third step prayer all the time. And it's, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I might better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And you know what else I've learned? You know the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. My sponsor has pounded in my head when I've lost my serenity, is what I prayed for and what I committed to when I came into this program. I've lost my conscious contact with my higher power, and I'm so grateful that I have that today. And it comes from doing the work, doing the writing, and this beautiful fellowship that shows me how to live. Thank you.
Thank you, Shelley. We're going to have time for three quick questions. It's a minute for the question and a minute to answer because we're running behind. Does anybody have any questions for Shelley?
Hi, this is Nancy from Ohio. I do.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Shelley, for talking about the big book. And I have a question. I'm relatively new to CHAL, and I see the word recovered in the book many times. What are your thoughts on that, or have you even thought about that? And I'll pass.
Okay. I'm a fellow Bucky. I just have to say that. I'm an Ohio girl. You know, I've had a lot of conversations about that, and for me, I look at it like this. As I said in my share, I have a daily reprieve dependent on my spiritual condition. And I believe that's what recovered is. Some people are firm believers, I have recovered. But, you know, for me, the disease is still doing push-ups. It's still out there, and that's such a wonderful question. And for me, I just know I have a daily reprieve, and that's how I see it. I hope I answered your question. And if not, please expound so I can help with that. Thank you.
You have. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Nancy. Next question for Shelley. All right, doesn't seem we have any more questions, so we'll move on to telephone and Adele. Adele, would you like to go ahead, please?
Hi, Adele, compulsive overeater bulimic.
How would you like your time?
Yes. Let me know when it's just 9 minutes. Okay, this is Adele, compulsive overeater. We'll be doing 2-4. Ginger is going to be reading 2-4 for me.
Okay, number 4, telephone calls. We are required to make 4 calls a day, 1 to our sponsor and 3 to other CHAL members. The phone is like a lifeline. We need the contact. It can be like a mini meeting.
Okay, thank you, Ginger. Well, okay, we're going to do a little history lesson on telephone calls, and I'm supposed to tell you why we make telephone calls, why is it, what's important, and why is it practical, how to put it in practice. Okay, we're going to start with one of the very important first calls that started our history, and that was Eddie was worried about Bill, and we'll just do a little Bill story. My wife was at work. I wonder whether I dare hide a full bottle of gin near the head of the bed. I would need it before daylight. My muse was interrupted by the telephone call, the cheerful voice of an old schoolmate friend asking if he might come over. He was sober. He told of a single religious idea and a practical program of action. He come to pass his experience along to me, if I cared to have it. Bill was shocked but interested. Certainly, I was interested. I had to be. I was hopeless. Okay, and that came from page 8 and 9 and 10 of the big book, not following each other. Okay. And this has come from Coming of Age, page 65. It was May 1935. Bill went on a business trip with others. Bill's side got licked by his newfound acquaintance, were discouraged, and they left him in Akron Mayflower Hotel with only $10 in his pocket. They departed on Friday. On Saturday, Mother's Day Eve, I was pacing up and down the hotel lobby, wondering what I could do. The bar at one end of the beat was filling up rapidly. I could hear the buzz of conversation in there. Down at the other end of the lobby, I found myself pausing before a church directory. Then I was seized with a thought.
I'm going to get drunk. Maybe I won't get drunk. Then I panic. That was really a gift. I had never panicked before. I remember that in trying to help others, I had to stay sober myself. I needed another alcoholic to talk to. Choosing at random from the church director, he ended up calling Walter. Okay, in a frantic, honestly, I poured out my tales to him. He gave Bill a list of 10 people who might be able to help him. It was Saturday. People was not home or not interested. The list dwindled until it came down to the one name at the very end, and that was Henrietta Seiberlin. He thought I could hardly call up the president's wife of Goodyear, telling her I was a drunk from New York looking for another drunk to work on. So he went back downstairs and walked up and down the lobby some more. Something kept saying to me, call her. I finally rung her up. She was the daughter-in-law of Seiberlin. I told her I needed to help another alcoholic. I know someone you can help. Won't you come over? Come out right away. I live in the gatehouse. When I told my story, she said, I know just the man for you. And he called himself Dr. Bob. Henrietta called Annie. Annie told, Henrietta told her about an alcoholic there who wanted to talk to another one. Could they come over? Annie said, I'm sorry, Henrietta. I don't think Bob makes such a big a deal about me on Mother's Day. What about tomorrow? Henrietta said. Annie said they would try. At 5 o'clock, that wonderful couple stood at Henrietta's door, uneasy. Bob told them that he could only stay 15 minutes. He brightened a little when I said I thought he needed a drink. After dinner, which he didn't eat, Henrietta discreetly put us off in the library room. Bob and Bill talked until 11 o'clock. Bob did not look like much like a founder that day. Bob said in his part of a common age that he knew that Bill could help him because, you know, he was one of him in the story that he had told. And just before Bill went to Akron, Dr. Silver had given him a great piece of advice. You have nothing but failure because you are preaching at these alcoholics. So we don't preach at people. Okay, and Ginger will come in and read Ready, Set, Go, and that's from our Forever Abstinence. Ginger, can you come in, please?
Do not try to do this alone. Talk to people about what they are doing and get a feel what the process is like. Take names and phone numbers from the sign-in sheet and use them. If you are unsure about anything, leave it alone. Call your sponsor, ask others in the program, and then make a decision. Do not depend on others to maintain your abstinence. You must empower yourself. Our daily call with our sponsees are vital. Oh, boy. Okay.
You want to get your ticket up from there?
Okay. Thank you.
No problem. Ginger, I'll tell you later why Ginger is helping me out. It is recommended that these calls last 10 to 15 minutes. Okay, 2-4. If anybody read 2-4, it say, we make the phone call, not receive the call, phone call, not return the phone call this, you know, the same day. Okay, so do not say anything about text and email. Email and text is not calling. It's a form of isolation. Phone call is for us to establish a relationship because we need the support and we are not used to having that. When someone calls you, it is their call. You cannot say, hang up and let me call you back. And if you call them back the same day, it's their day call. When you have a make an outreach call, it should be quiet, like a mini meeting, not a TV blasting in the background. I have had newcomers sometime call and say they're scared to get off the phone because the person that took them hostage. And I have found it easy to let
let them know at the beginning of the phone call how much time I'm available. Calling your sponsor 10 to 15 minutes, she would discuss what you should talk about. It is important to call on time because she, somebody already said earlier, she have set that time aside. I have a sponsor who go to only one face-to-face meeting and do some phone bridge meeting. I tell her to call different people and just not the people at her face-to-face meeting because we have such a wide variety in the phone list from the phone bridge. And when I, and also myself, when I couldn't reach someone, I left a message of what was stressing me out, and I felt better. And I want to talk about one call. Your phone call is a one-on-one conversation, not for you to tell others. Doubt you ask. And I had that happen to me yesterday. It was a good example, and it was that I was sitting there waiting to come in to get a room in the hospital, and I called somebody and, told them what was going on. And then when I called them back that night, they asked me, can I tell people? So she respected my anonymity and the phone call that we had on a one-on-one basis. And that's why Ginger is helping me out today because I had called her and she took my phone call and I had asked her to, if I couldn't do it, would she do it for me? So she's helping me. Okay, and, I have heard somebody have a bad phone call where, this girl was falling asleep in meetings and she had a mental condition and, her medicine was making her fall asleep in meetings and, a girl in the medical field, mental health, called her and told her you should go to this doctor because your doctor is somewhat over-medicating you. And, the girl went and she in and out of mental institution, police
you
being called on her.
1 minute left.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so that's good. So she ended up in out of mental institution, and the police being called on her, and I lost her phone number, and I have been in contact with her, but she, years later, she still wasn't as back to herself. So we need to be very careful on these phone calls. We are not doctors. If you is a doctor, you're not their doctor. So be careful when you giving advice and stuff. And, sometimes advice, help, and sometimes it don't. And, unfortunately, this girl follow this person suggesting, and, she ended up not doing too well. And I have had a good phone call on a medical condition. One day I was in pain and somebody called me. And I'm going, oh, my God, I don't have time to take this call. I'm in pain. And it was a pain I never had before up the front of my leg. And I took the call, and she told me what to do, and the pain went away. So, it's kind of touchy with these phone calls. So I think that's pretty much all I needed to share, and I was able to get it in my 10 minutes. And if you guys have three questions, that's what I'll take. And Suzanne said we'll do the rest at the end. So, Suzanne, I'll give it back to you.
Okay, thank you, Adele. Any questions for Adele about telephone calls?
Hi, this is Bobby. I've got a question on phone calls.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. One of the things my first sponsor said is, on these phone calls, when you're doing your outreach, think about keeping it to 3 minutes, like we do a three-minute share. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense because I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. But I thought it makes a lot of sense because people are busy, and I know sometimes they don't have time to talk long, but I thought that was kind of a nice guideline to use.
Yeah, I think it's good. And also, I know sometimes I get a phone call like in the middle of a meal, and I'll just tell them, I'm having a meal. I'll call you back, and sometimes I don't even answer when I'm having a meal. Not available to give more than I can. So, it's always good to establish because newcomers sometimes is very scared to say I got to go, and and I'm not saying that was me, but a couple of newcomers have mentioned it to me before.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
So what do you say when you make the outreach call? What do you say? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay, you know, you asked them how their program is going. I try not to get into the politics and what's going on in the world today because everybody have opinion and they might be different, and that's fine that stepping outside the rim of see how, you know, you pretty much keep it to the program. You know, how's your program going? Whatever, you know, what other means do you go to? Maybe what book are you doing your questions out now? Maybe, you know, sometimes people call with their own food issue, and, you know, you can always talk to somebody else about it, but you know, you are responsible for your own food. So it's mostly program stuff that we want to talk about. I don't want to talk about your AA issue. I don't want to talk about your Al-Anon issue, your Debtors Anonymous issue. It's all about see how.
Thank you.
Thank you, Adele. Okay, last chance. If anybody has a question, let's get the question going so we can move it along a little bit. Okay, before we move on to meetings, because we're doing it alt math, abstinence literature, telephone calls, meetings, anonymity, service, and sponsorship, because that's the way I remember it, I just wanted to give a plug. A few years ago at the intergroup, we voted to ask for Seventh Tradition. So if any of you like the workshop, and if you're listening to this live or you're listening to this as a recording on the, either on the phone line or on the website, please send the Seventh Tradition contribution to the phone bridge. Go to meetings and on the CAHEL website and go to the bottom of the phone bridge page and please send in a donation. And if there's any way to put in a note that it's for the workshop, please do that as well. Please be generous. As even a dollar would be great. If everybody put in a dollar, that would be really nice. Thank you for letting me do that plug, and we'll move on to meetings. I don't know if any of the panelists have the tool of meeting. If not, I'll just say three meetings a week. Does anybody have one of the panelists have the meetings, the tool of meetings? I could read for me.
I could read the tool.
Thank you, Michelle.
Meetings. We must attend three meetings a week. Those members who have at least 30 days of continuous CEHEL abstinence may pitch. Those members who have at least 7 days of continuous CEHEL abstinence may pitch if their pitching has been discussed with their sponsor. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. And B, could you tell me when I've spoken for 5 minutes and then give me a 2-minute warning to wrap up? Oh, it's now Susie. Susie, are you ready to take over the timing?
Yes. How would you like to be timed?
Yes. Could you tell me when 5 minutes are up and then give me a 2-minute warning?
Okay. Will do.
Okay. Thank you, Susie, and thank you, B, for your timing. I'm Suzanne, grateful compulsive eater, been around 17 years plus, abstinent 17 years plus, and my tool is meetings. And it says 3 meetings a week, and it does not say 3 CAHEL meetings a week because when the tools were written, we didn't have enough CAHEL meetings. And members were encouraged to go to open AA meetings to complement whatever face-to-face meeting they had. But the spirit of the tool is that we do 3 CAHEL meetings a week. And with the phone bridge, it's actually very, 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 very doable. So what is a meeting? Well, a meeting is if I get there early and stay till the end. If I get to the meeting in the middle, it doesn't count. It has to be a full meeting. And that's what I was taught. You get there early and you stay late, and if it's a face-to-face, I sit up in front, and we stay till the end. The other thing is, if I need my 3 meetings that I'm going to count, not multitasking, it doesn't mean I'm cutting up my vegetables, listening to the radio in the background, listening to a meeting, because am I really there? Am I really present? Am I really engaged? If I were in a face-to-face meeting, I would not be doing these things. I would be fully engaged with my full attention, either doing the reading if it's a book study or listening to the speaker. That's respectful. So in a way, it's respecting myself by giving myself that gift of being fully present for the meeting. Now, I know some people are driving to and from work and they're listening to a meeting. I get that. That's fine. But if the 3 meetings that we need to count, those 3 meetings, we need to do the whole meeting without any distraction. So that's that. And meeting etiquette. You know, I need to remember, I need to share my own experience, strength, and hope, not someone else's. No crosstalk, you know. I can thank the speaker, and I always say, this is just me. I always say, wonderful share, wonderful topic. I always say that to everybody. It doesn't matter who it is. That's it. No more. And I don't go on and on and on. I remember there was a long time ago that I did, and my sponsor took me aside and said, no, just say thank you for your wonderful share, and that's it. Okay, so that's what I do. I need to share. I need to speak up. If I'm at a meeting and I'm just in the shadows, I don't speak up, I don't read, I don't share, or I don't leave my phone number, then am I really part of my meeting? And it really is important to be part of, because for so many of us, we never felt part of, we never belonged, and it's a habit. It's a bad habit, and bad habits are hard to break, but not impossible. So I have to put myself out there and open my mouth and at least leave my number. And, you know, it's really good. If you're going to a meeting, let's say it's an AA Comes of Age meeting, please have your book and be willing to read. That's being of service, which is another tool, but it's part of the meeting. Be of service at that meeting. And the other thing is, what do I share? I think I got sidetracked for a minute there. Sorry, everybody. What do I share on? My own experience, strength, and hope, as I said. I don't bring in outside issues. I remember I was at a face-to-face meeting many years ago. It was my home meeting. And someone started sharing about politics. And I got really uncomfortable. Even though it may have been my own type of politics, I just know from studying, you know, the steps and traditions, that type of stuff broke up with the Washingtonians. And I want to keep the program alive and healthy for the next person and the next generation. So, you know, I don't bring in outside issues. That also means I don't bring in outside literature. We have conference-approved literature, which are several books. We do not bring in, for example, the Good Book. Actually, I'm just going to say it because this is a workshop. The Bible. I can quote the Bible. I'll give an example, because I had a mentor who mentored me in service, and she said, if you want to quote something from the Bible, here's how to do it. Honor the parents. Everybody knows what book that is. I don't have to say what the book is, and I don't even have to quote it perfectly. You guys get the gist. I remember I was at a meeting, and someone quoted a bunch of lyrics from a rock song, which were very 12-step-ish. But they made the mistake of saying, well, you just heard whatever the group's name was. And you don't need to do that. And so I need to be mindful of not bringing outside issues, not bring outside literature. Outside literature, for me, there is a lot of good stuff, a lot of good stuff out there. Does it mean that I can't read it? Does it mean I can't write about it? I don't bring it into the meetings. The meetings are the 12, you know, the 12 and 12, the Big Book, AA Comes of Age, as Bill sees.
5 minutes.
Thank you. Came to Believe. Living Sober. Experience Strength and Hope. I bet hardly any of you guys have heard of that one. Those are the stories that they cut out of the first, second, and third edition, the personal stories. It's called Experience Strength and Hope. That's conference approved. Pass It On. That's the story of Bill Wilson. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And I think I forgot one. Those are all conference approved, and those we can quote and talk about those books. But outside issues are outside issues, and we have to remember our primary purpose. And I've also learned not to bash any of my former sponsors or sponsees. I have shared on a general rate, but I have to make it about me. I'll just say this. I used to have a sponsor on another program, and I do say this, but I say it to her very openly. I still have a really good relationship with her. She taught me a lot about how to sponsor. And I also learned a lot of things not to do. And I've told her that. She's like, yeah, I was really new sponsoring. I made a lot of mistakes. But I owe her a debt of gratitude beyond my wildest dreams, because she really drilled into me service. When I came into this program, I was very willing to take any direction and do service right away from day one. I was very, very willing, because she had been very good teaching me that. So I do share that. So let's see. So make sure that if you're at your CA Howe phone bridge meeting, You're not distracted with all sorts of stuff. And if you live with someone else, don't have it on speakerphone. I don't do that. If I do that, I'm in my room with my door shut because it is private. It's for us. You know, if you're on a Zoom meeting, same thing. You know, it says don't have people walking around in the background and eating on camera. So I wear headphones, and, of course, my husband and I are both blind. So, I mean, my husband's not going to see anything. He can't hear anything because I'm wearing headphones on the Zoom meetings. So be very mindful. And like I said, participation. If you're not abstinent, there are things you can do. You can be a timer. You can read. How many meetings have we been on where no one will read? And I know some people are at home. And it is a service. I have to remember, service is freedom of bondage of self, which is not the tool that I'm speaking on, but someone else is going to speak on that. And then the other thing, why do we go to meetings, and why do we have to listen to a whole rigmarole of all the readings and the announcements? Because as a compulsive eater / addict, and we're all addicts, whether we like to admit that or not, but we are, we forget. You know, we have convenient forgetters. If I do not hear the concept, the steps, traditions, the concept and the tools of every meeting, I'm not going to remember that
Who
stuff.
Knew it?
Thank you. I have to be constantly reminded. That's why we get there early and we stay till the end. Same thing for the announcements. If I'm not there to hear the announcements, how do I know what's going on in my program with other people? And, you know, we do have the trifecta of the three legacies, unity, service, and recovery. And part of that is hearing the announcements to hear what's going on in other meetings or other intergroups. To be fully in the middle of the herd, be fully present, and be part of, because for so much of my life, a good part of it anyway, I felt I did not belong, and I was on the outside looking in. And here I get to be in the middle of the herd, just your average Joe Blow compulsive eater, garden variety compulsive eater. I'm not unique. I'm not any better than anyone else. And I get to go to meetings, and I get to hear all the readings and the announcements and stay till the end, because my M.O. before would be, I'll just listen to part of it because I'm too busy. Well, I have to invest in myself, and I know that today I'm worth it. Today I'm worth investing that time, and I know that it's for me, and it's a gift for me, because in the past I've been very stingy. I was very good to my mom. I bought all the organic stuff for her, not for me. You know, I bought her and certain things, nicer things than for myself. And for today, my mom said to me before she died, you got to start taking care of yourself and putting yourself first for a change. So for today, by coming to the meetings and staying for the whole meeting and at least claiming my seat, I am gifting myself life. I'm gifting myself program. I'm gifting myself abstinence. And because of that, I am happy, joyous, and free. And I want to share that with other people so that the program continues to grow and flourish. Thank you, everybody, for letting me share. And does anybody have any questions about meetings?
Suzanne, thank you for your wonderful talk. I'm Elizabeth, compulsive eater. I have a question. When someone is talking and all of a sudden they bring outside topics, all of a sudden they're talking about their talk, they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope, and all of a sudden they start talking about something out, some outside issue, what is the best way, in a polite way, without, you know, offending somebody, to say to that person, is it up to the leader of the meeting, who's leading the meeting, you know, leading the shares, or is it up to anybody?
Well, the probably the best way to handle it, if the leader hasn't caught it or the leader is a little shy, someone can say, could you please read the paragraph on crosstalk? Because the crosstalk says, you know, we don't talk about religion, philosophy, outside issues. I have been at face-to-face meeting where someone will start that and someone will yell, that's an outside issue, and that'll stop them right there. But probably the best way to do it is, let's say if I heard someone talking about whatever, I could say, leader, could you please read the paragraph on crosstalk?
If they have a paragraph, thank you so much.
Yeah, there is a paragraph. It's in the format.
Oh, in the format.
Every meeting has a format, and it's in the format.
That's right.
Some of the speakers might, or somebody might get a little upset about it, but then maybe perhaps a call after the meeting to explain what happened, because I was leading a meeting, and it was a Came to Believe, and somebody was sharing something. It was fairly generic, and someone said to me, I want you to read the paragraph on crosstalk. Well, I pretty much know what it is, but I said, let me do a share, and I think that'll suffice. And the person called me later, and she said it was perfect, it was fine. It was, and I, because I didn't think, the person didn't say anything, really, but it can be a little tricky.
Suzanne, Mr. Bill, I have a question.
Yes, Adele.
Okay, what do you say if you're the leader, and I know we're supposed to do positive pitch, but, you know, sometimes, I guess, sponsee and the sponsor had a falling out, and, you know, the sponsee come on the phone bridge and the phone meeting just, you know, kind of bashing the sponsor that they just let go of?
Well, that's a tricky one because, I mean, some would say it's an outside issue because it's not about their experience, strength, and hope, and yet it is program related. Perhaps a phone call to that person later and just say, you know, are you aware that this is, you know, that this happened, and maybe you want to call that person instead of sharing on it at a meeting.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, Adele. Anyone else?
Hey, sweet Susie, this is Ginger.
Hey, Ginger.
I believe that somewhere it says that we don't stop our meetings and then reopen them so people can share who don't have abstinence. Am I right on that? Our meeting should
right.
go to the full hour.
Yes, we do not close the meeting early, and if people are not participating, there are suggestions on how to keep the meeting going for the full. If the meeting is an hour, it has to go for an hour. We do not close to allow and open it up again for people who are not abstinent. We're supposed to either continue reading. You could read from any of the 12-step books or reading from the book that you were reading from, or doing some more of the closing readings. That is helpful. And even a writing, like everybody have a meditation for it and write on it. But we are to keep the meeting going. We are structured. Thank you, Ginger. We are structured and disciplined, and we're supposed to start on time and end on time. Good point.
Okay. So then, if you're at a meeting and the leader says, let's do this, I just don't know how to handle that.
Suzanne, this is over three questions now. I think we need to move on.
I'm going to answer that, Michelle, because I think it's important, but thank you, and then I'll move on. You know, I think it is the responsibility of a person saying, and I have done this, we are supposed to go for the whole hour, and the abstinence requirement is during that hour, but just say in a very nice way. But we do need to speak up.
Thank you.
Okay. Next is, and thank you, Michelle. Thank you, Ginger. Next is anonymity and Susan. Susan, how would you like your time with Susie?
I would like a 5-minute heads up and then a 1-minute heads up, please.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, hi, everyone. My name is Susan. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm very glad to be here as part of the 7 Tools workshop. Thanks to all the people who've presented so far. I've been listening and learning. And the tool that I'll be speaking about is anonymity. Anonymity is tool number 3. Who you see here, what you hear here. When you leave here, let it stay here. When we meet another member in the outside world, we do not mention that they are members of CHOW. I would like to read a little bit. I'll be taking some quotes from the AA Big Book, from AA Comes of Age, maybe from As Bill Sees It and from Daily Reflections, if anybody wants to follow along. This is the long form of tradition number 11 and tradition number 12 from the AA Big Book, page 565, fourth edition. Tradition 11, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members or not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. And Tradition 12. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. And that's good stuff. I think that there's the big definition of anonymity where I'm honoring the tradition of the See How program, the traditions of the See How program, and then there's the day-to-day, the nitty-gritty anonymities. And just to say a little bit about anonymity for me, first of all, I don't have to be anonymous as a member in See How. I have been in See How since October 23rd, 2006, and I'm maintaining a 45-pound weight loss, and I'm a full-service sponsor. There's a, you know, there's a balance between honoring anonymity and also being so anonymous that, you know, nobody will ever know my message. So I think that's part of what I'm learning about anonymity as I go along. It's a tradition that talks about sacrifice, and it talks about lessening my ego. And that word, that evasive word, but so important, humility. So that somehow, somewhere in these days that I've been here in See How, I'm learning to respect myself and respect others and respect the program. And the word sacrifice comes up. In AA Comes of Age, there's a whole chapter on anonymity. It's page 286 in AA Comes of Age, Why Alcoholics Anonymous is Anonymous, by Bill. Okay, this is what Bill says. At the beginning, we sacrificed alcohol. We had to, or it would have killed us. But we couldn't get rid of alcohol unless we made other sacrifices. Big shotism, phony thinking had to go. We had to toss self-justification, self-pity, and anger right out the window. We had to quit the crazy contest.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Susie. We had to quit the crazy contest for personal prestige and big bank balances. We had to take personal responsibility for our sorry state and quit blaming others for it. Were these sacrifices? Yes, they were. To gain enough humility and self-respect to stay alive at all, we had to give up what had really been our dearest possession, our ambition and our illegitimate pride. But even this was not enough. Sacrifice had to go further. Other people had to benefit, too. So we took on some 12-step work. We began to carry the message. We sacrificed time, energy, and our own money to do this. We could not keep what we had unless we gave it away. So that's a big question in this tool of anonymity. How do I balance that between keeping what I have and giving it away, and what's the right way to give it away? Just for the day-to-day nitty-gritty, when I turn over my tools, when I speak to my sponsor each day, I go over each tool and how I've worked it. And for anonymity, I usually say I've practiced anonymity and I didn't gossip. And then if I have gossiped, I will talk about it, and I will talk about, you know, what I did and what I could have done differently. But, you know, gossip is one thing, and there's all types of gossip. And anonymity for me covers a lot. I've heard people getting hurt, little hurts and not so little hurts, when their own anonymity has been broken. I mean, there's really no reason to leave program, you know, because people say, I've left program because my anonymity was broken. You know, a very huge, big celebrity had said that a long time ago, and I remember in the OA program. But there's really no good reason for me or anybody to leave program, but it hurts. It hurts when somebody is, you know, their anonymity has been breached. So it's important for me to remember that. It's important for me to not really need to know names. And I am one of the most curious people there is going, and I want to know a lot of things. I want to know who your sponsor is. I want to know this. I want to know that. And some things are just not my business. I want to know who's going to be speaking at this particular workshop, or at who's the keynote speaker, who's this. And these type of things are really not necessary, and it comes to me with, you know, part of character building, or, you know, getting a little bit of a stronger or a better character. I do think it's fine for, you know, me to speak at meetings, or to even speak out in public in a limited way, not, you know, that, as we say, not on in film and media. Radio, press, films, and other public media of communication. But, you know, we're expanding, and technology is expanding. So I think I'm learning from my own mistakes, and I'm probably learning from the mistakes of everybody from way back, from when the AA program started. I know that we're on Instagram now as a fellowship. And I know people are on Facebook, not people so much as the program.
I have 1 minute.
1 minute, thank you. I have heard people say something like, well, I can say that I'm a recovering compulsive eater, but it's not such a good thing for me to say I'm a recovering compulsive eater and member of CHOW, you know, out in the public, because that's taking the program... that's taking the program in. So I know I have the choice of being anonymous or not being anonymous. Sometimes we go to maybe ridiculous lengths to protect anonymity when, you know, I really do need to know something about someone, maybe their last name or where they live or some personal information, if the person is okay with it. Some people are, some people are not. So again, I need to keep growing and learning more and more what this spiritual tool is. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And now, does anybody have any questions for Susan?
I do. I'm Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thank you, Susan. I've been in program a long time. It took me for years to get this much time. I came in 50 years ago. I think anonymity is really important. If you had a sponsee that you've been sponsoring for a long time, and you got wind that they discussed everyone's business, not just their name, what would you do? What would you suggest?
It's not me. Let's see. Thank you, Lynn, for the question. Now, that's serious. I probably have only my version of what the answer is, but a good talk would be good, a good talk between the two of you. You know, this is a program of progress, not perfection, but sometimes you do make mistakes, and sometimes they're big mistakes. So a good talking to, I believe, that's about the best I could come up with.
Thank you, Susan.
Any other questions for Susan? All right, then we're moving on to our next tool, and that would be service and Sheila.
Okay.
How would you like your time?
5:41.
Okay, go for it, Ms. Sheila. Thank you so much.
Hi, my name is Sheila B., and I have to say Sheila B. from Colorado, because there's about three other Sheila B.'s now. So I have to make sure people know where I'm coming from. My name is Sheila B. I'm a compulsive overeater, a carbohydrate addict. And I am going to share with you on service, which is very important thing in my life, and I just love it. It's like a high for me, I'll be honest, you know, doing service. It really is. Okay, it says here, this is a little introduction. It says, CEA Howe began by members just like us, volunteering to be of service. And just like us, they were doing things they hadn't done before and weren't sure how to do. We wouldn't be here today if they hadn't surrendered their egos and taken that leap of faith into the unknown. When service information and actions are new or unfamiliar to you, relax and reflect. And remember that we are all in this together with our higher power with us. And your higher power, for me, my higher power is God, but whatever it is to me that gives you strength to do what you need to do to take care of yourself, I say go for it. Okay, what is service? Service is freedom from bondage of self. It's the CEA Howe Seven Tools, tool number 6. Service is sharing our experience, strength, and hope freely with our fellowship. In service, members share the Way We Work program. In service, we share our commitment by helping others step up to service by being an example of how we do it. Service is reaching out to newcomers, abstinent members, recommitted members, and those still struggling to be abstinent. Service is sharing gratitude for recovery while working to maintain abstinence. Holding back from doing service means holding back from making progress in our recovery. Service brings stability, order, and happiness to the life of each member. Look for the joy as we lighten our load by our partnership with higher power and our fellows. Keep in mind the many gifts we receive when we do service. We will join our fellows in saying, some of my greatest growth has come from doing service above the meeting level. Service starts with abstinence, the greatest service to ourselves, being of service in our 12-step. We carry the message of serving our fellows. Maybe we are thinking, why is it important to help others? The answer is that we cannot maintain our absence if we don't carry the message of recovery to our fellows. Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book speaks about working with others and the importance of being an example that recovery is possible. And I'm just going to finish this and I'm going to share a little. In CEA Howe, we have many opportunities to be of service on every level. Everyone can do service. Members are encouraged to record service progression each year on our CEA Howe birthdays to see how we have progressed in our recovery. Recovery is about change, and we are our own agents of change. So to me, service is very important, and I remember when I walked in these rooms, not this room, but a 12-step room, my first 12-step room was OA gray sheet. That's just what it was in the 70s. And I remember that they always said, and I never forget it, we give back graciously at what we have been given through this program. And I just love that. I always remember that. I love doing service. I love giving of myself because my feeling is if I help one person, just one, I will feel absolutely wonderful because that's what it is giving of myself, you know, and all I can do is share really how I work my program, what works for me. I'm sure people get tired of me saying the same thing over and over how I do my program, but, you know, that's what works for me. That's what helps me to be a better person. That helps me to grow and to learn and turning it over to my higher power. You know, the growth, that is very important to me. And that has really helped me. I'm just recommitted and I have today's, I think, 205
minutes.
Thank you. But the most important thing to me is that I love to give of myself and to help others. And this here, I'm going to get into this now. Okay, being of service. How can I be of service? We share the greatest gift we have. We give of ourselves. All members have something to share. No gifts of service are small or unimportant. The challenges of service will help us grow. And, you know, I try to say to people, this is not a contest. You know, we don't get on here and, okay, well, I have to make sure that I say the right words and I say the right thing, or what am I going to do? That isn't what it's about. It's about giving from our heart and our soul. And just saying, like you say, what we do, what we need to do, what we hope to do. One day at a time. That's me. Just one day at a time. So I think that's what is important, really, to me, of giving, like I say, of giving service. Sometimes the little service we give creates the greatest impact as we share our life each day. I've gotten some very nice phone calls from people. You know, people will say, oh, I'm so glad you said that. I needed to hear that. And that like, blows me away. I just love it. I'm just, like, flying around the house. The many gifts, great and small, that a higher power has given us, if shared, brightens our day and others, too, even if the sky is gray. A life of service blooms like flowers. The more we cultivate and share, the more flowers bloom. And I love that. I love, and I believe in that saying, you know, bloom where you plant it. I've moved a couple of different times, well, about 7 or 8 times. And I always have that sign, you know, bloom where you plant it. I always say, meet the people, you know where you are. I just think I think about that just like our friendships, you know, our fellowship, is that, you know, that we bloom and we grow together and we help each other. This is a program of helping each other. That's what it is, you know, and sometimes just listening, sometimes, you know, if someone asked you a certain question or something, you know, that you can answer through your telephone calls. No matter what our service might be, we don't procrastinate. We really want to live the promises we give of ourselves today. But the most of now and find greater happiness each moment, each day, through service and CEA How. And I just want to, I know the time is going, I just want to read this here. The gifts of service. Service sparks warmth, happiness, and meaning in our lives as we expand our limits of thinking and feeling. What a beautiful thing. I love it. Service strengthens our connection with our fellows and our higher power. I feel that every time I get on a meeting, I'm strengthening my program. That's why I get on meetings, because I want to give of myself and I want to strengthen my program. And that's what's really very important for me, because I have a disease and one day at a time I have to arrest it with the help of my higher power, the fellowship, and my sponsor. And that's what I do. That's what I need to do. Service creates a sense of belonging, reminding us we are not alone. That is such a comforting and wonderful feeling, to know that we are not alone. Probably alone many of times, and I think, thank you, Susie. Okay, and your service keeps CEA functioning and growing. Your fellow compulsive eater in and outside the rooms are thankful for your generous service. And just wanted to put this in, is that there's a structure here. It's like we start off with CEA How groups, how do you give service? Intergroups, which you can do that. Area assemblies, you can do that. All this you can do is when you are working your program and being successful. World Service Business Conference and the World Service Board. So there's lots that you can go up the ladder, climb up the ladder if you want, do whatever you want. And like I say, you know, and definitely, like I say, you know, service is freedom from bondage of self. And you know what? If we keep it, nobody gets to know it, and nobody gets to share it, and nobody gets to help themselves maybe what they're afraid, like I say, to share or anything. But service is a very, very important thing for me to keep my program and keep my abstinence one day at a time. That's all I ask for. Okay, and I guess I'll stop there so I don't go over time. Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Sheila. Does anybody have any questions for Sheila? Star 6 to unmute. Questions for service. Sheila in service.
This is Kim in Texas. I have a question about, Sheila, how many days of abstinence is required to do service as an in-group rep for a meeting?
Okay. 90 days. 90 days. You need to be an integral representative.
Thank you.
That's all you need.
I would just like to say that our group is 90 days, and most is 90 days, but there might be different rules for different intergroups, but generally it's 90 days, and here in the Foambridge it's 90 days.
This is Lori from Colorado.
Yes, go ahead.
Where were you reading from? I must have missed it because there was a lot of really good stuff.
Okay, this is a book that came out on September 19th, and it's called the CEA House Service Manual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's guidance, support, and understanding of all the CEA House service positions. And so, it's what I'm telling you, I'll be honest with you, and I'm going to be honest to say that, you know what, I didn't pick up this book much, I have to say it, and then when I decided that I wanted to share on service, that's what I did, and it's interesting because, just quickly I'll say, CEHA is a program in which we support one another. We celebrate abstinence and take pleasure in acknowledging our progress. We have taken positive actions towards building joy and happiness and continue abstinent in our lives. So,
well, thank you, and I'm glad I'm not alone because I have the book and I haven't read it either, and now I will.
Oh, great, great, and call me and we'll discuss it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Any other questions for Sheila?
Yes, I have a question. This is Lily.
Go ahead.
When you want to be of service as an intergroup representative,
mm-hmm.
Besides the 90 days, is there any other qualifications like being a food sponsor as well?
Yes.
Susan, can you answer that? She's right on
top
of
that. You've got to be a food sponsor. Step up as a food sponsor.
Mm. Okay. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Thank you so much. Wonderful.
Thanks, Lily.
Okay. One other quick question. Any other questions quickly? Okay. We're going to move on to our last speaker, and that is sponsorship, and that's Cheryl. And everybody, if you stay on, we'll have questions. If we have time, we'll stop the recording. We'll exchange phone numbers, and I have an announcement. So stay on after the recording has stopped. Cheryl, how would you like your time with Susie?
5 and 1 would be fine, Susie. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, take it away, Cheryl, and please read your tool. Thank you. I'm going to mute.
Thank you. And first of all, thank you so much, Suzanne, for organizing and moderating this workshop. Really appreciate it. A lot of service there. Cheryl, compulsive eater in New York. Sponsorship. A sponsor is a compulsive eater who, thank God, has 30 days of back-to-back CEHA abstinence. A sponsor will help you work through the 12 steps. Everyone in CEHA is sponsored according to the same lot guidelines. Sponsors must have 30 days of abstinence, have completed 30 days of questions, and have taken the first 3 steps. When I used to be a sponsor coordinator in the past, I would get this question. I get this request. I need a good sponsor. So what is a good sponsor? Well, a good sponsor is someone that gives of her time, her experience, strength, and hope, and supports another compulsive eater. A good sponsor is available at the time that's been established and is there and is willing to listen. And in my opinion, a good sponsor does not offer much comment, but that is me. There are 2 different ways to sponsor. There are those sponsors that like to give support, like to comment, and there are some sponsors that would just listen. And again, this all it has to be established at the front of the relationship, because It depends on what. I have a new sponsee. Last week someone came on, and she wants to hear me interact. She wants to hear my opinion. And for me, that's fine. I can do that, absolutely. But on the other hand, me, when I'm giving my question to my sponsor, I just want to read it and talk, but I don't need any input from her unless I ask for it. Unless something comes up and I really want her help. But so there are two different ways to do it, and it's a good thing to find out right up front whether a person really wants your input or not. First of all, the types of sponsors that we have are food inventory, step, and maintenance at different levels, 30 days on the food, and then inventory sponsor. When you've done your inventory, you can then become an inventory sponsor, you stepped up, and then food, the steps and maintenance level as well. The thing that I find about sponsorship, that people are afraid of sponsoring. They're fearful, just as was I. When someone steps up and we've done the third step inventory, we've done the third step ceremony, and, you know, it's time to sponsor, start sponsoring. And they'll always say, I don't know enough. I don't know anything. I can't do this. I'm not ready for it. And if they don't, I smile. And because if everyone does that, everyone is afraid. And so I think that I need to ask sponsors to remember that I need to give back that which I receive every day. I get the 15 minutes from my sponsor every day. I need to be able to give that to someone else as well. And I've been known to overdo it sometimes, had 8 or 10 sponsors at the same time. I've toned that down a bit, but it's very important to be able to be there and help someone else. Yes, it's frightening, yes, it's scary, and yes, it's uncomfortable, but once you start doing it, it becomes something that I look forward to. I love sponsoring. The sponsor needs to be a compassionate, it needs to be a relationship of compassion, care, respect, and honor. I need to understand that my sponsor doesn't have to do this thing. She's there for me. She wants to be there. She wants to listen to me. She's available on time. When I call my sponsor, I dial all the numbers, and my finger's ready to dial the last digit of the last number so that I call exactly on time. I do it, and I expect it, and it works the best that way. If you're not going to be available to your sponsor or sponsee, please let them know in advance so that there's no hard feelings there. Having me wait on my phone for 15 minutes because you forgot to call or you couldn't call or you didn't tell me you're not going to call is a little upsetting. It's like I don't go for coffee. I don't even go to the bathroom sometimes. I wait until your phone call comes in. So for me to sit there waiting for 15 minutes, it's not fair, so we shouldn't do it. And we should also be available to sponsees so that they don't have to be hanging and waiting. So again, honoring the sponsor's time and being there when you said you'd be there. And then we talk about sponsors that are too rigid, too strict. And there's one example that comes to mind is there's someone that refuses to let sponsors eat out. Now, that's not CHOW's rules. We are allowed to eat out. So what ended up happening is that the sponsee left and went out telling everyone out there that don't go to CHOW because they don't let you eat out. And that's false. So I need to be very careful. I don't eat out.
5 minutes.
Thank you, Susie. So we need to be very careful with what we put out there because it's taken for face value. People don't always understand that, you know, eating out is allowed. Some people insist that you take a scale with. Others, if you're ready to eyeball it, that's fine. But we need to be careful with what we put out there. And then the most important thing for me, I believe, is the anonymity and the no prejudging people, no advice, no crosstalk, and no suggestions. I'm here to listen. I'm here to help in any way that I can. But I am not here. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a therapist. I do not give advice to people in program. I don't give them suggestions. If they ask me what would I do or what they're going through, I'll say maybe if I were in that position, this is what I might do. But I cannot take the responsibility of advising anybody. And even if I know the answer, even if I know it's the right thing to do, it's not my job. Crosstalk, I do not discuss anybody else with anyone. If I want to talk to my sponsor about someone, about a sponsee doing this, that, or the other, I'll just say so-and-so. I do not need to leave names. And so anonymity, it was discussed before. I don't need to know who your sponsor is, and I don't want you to know who my sponsor is. So when you're sharing, or when you're sharing on a phone call, or you're discussing things, you know, you may want to say that my sponsor gave me a hard time today, but do not tell me who she is or who he is. It's not important for me to know that. And prejudging. I had someone come in the program in the beginning when I was new, and it was one of my, maybe my first sponsee, and I was going to do this thing. I was going to get it right. And she came in, you know, fighting tooth and nail, all these questions, and this is not for her, and why do we do this? And I said, I'm just going to hang in there. I did. That person now has 14 years of back-to-back CHL abstinence. Had I decided that I don't want to spend any more time with her, or that this was just enough, I don't know. It would be higher power. The one would know, you know, it was, she has her own higher power. But the problem is I need to do the best that I can and not prejudge. This person is going to make it. This person is not. Or I don't want to spend more time with them. Or again, this, the problem with slips, for example, three slips and you need to change. I don't go by that rule. It's in the sponsorship guidelines. You can decide what you want to do. I like give people another chance. You know, I know I've been there, done that, had my share of slips and relapse. So I like to know that it's okay. I'll give you more time. Go ahead and do it. Sponsoring is something that's vital, vital, vital to me in program. It's something that I've learned to. I can't do program without that. I need to know that I'm responsible for myself, first of all, and responsible for someone else's abstinence in any way that I possibly can. I used to think that if someone failed or they left the program or I couldn't, my sponsee would leave. I had a time when there were three of them left within a month's period, and I was sure it was me. I did something wrong. Why are they leaving? And I was told, no, that's not the case. They just weren't ready for it, you know? And so I now realize that there are more people that are not ready for it than those that do hang in there, but that's fine. I just need to be there for those that want it and willing to do it. So that's very important. Of course, I cannot do any of this without my higher power. He's there for me every minute of every day, and I talk to him. And
1 minute.
Thank you so much. Actually, my higher power's got a sense of humor because I have a new sponsor. We had changed about a week ago, and my call to her is 8:45. I was away for a couple of days, so I came back, and I forgot it was 8:45. And I'm sitting in front of my computer, and I'm waiting for the clock to hit 9 o'clock so I can call her. It wasn't 9. It was supposed to be 8:45, and I go, oh, my God, I'm supposed to talk about how important it is to respect your sponsor's time this afternoon, and look at what I just did. I had her sitting waiting for 50 minutes. I don't think that's ever happened to me, but that's my high power smiling down. So I'm just grateful I'm here. I'm grateful that he brought me to this place in the first place in 2001. My mom was passing away. I couldn't deal with the grief. I was eating my heart out, and someone just mentioned, come, just go to a meeting. Just go to one meeting, and I did, and I'm still here. Thank God. So anyway, this is Cheryl. Any questions now?
Any questions for Cheryl and sponsorship?
I have a question.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Hi, my name is Michelle. I'm a compulsive eater. How do you handle if a sponsee is calling you and missed a bunch of questions, you know, multiple times in a row, not doing them or canceling, like, right before the call? I mean, how do you handle that?
It's a very good question, Michelle. What I would do is I would take some time and discuss it. How willing are you willing to do this program? How serious are you about this program? How much would you stand to lose if you didn't work this program? Gratitudes, you know, how important is this program to you? So bringing it back to the core of why we're here, and then find out what it is that makes her slack up on the writings or calls.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Cheryl?
There's one more thing that in regards to that question. I have this thing about writing, you know, always writing, other than the questions that we do all the time, is the pros and cons. You know, if I have a situation, any situation at all, I always ask my sponsees, and I do that myself, is write, take a piece of paper, scribble the pros and cons. You know, why is this happening? What's good about it? What's wrong with it? How can I change it? Can I change it? Serenity prayer. I do the serenity prayer an awful lot. And then sit down for a few minutes and have it in front of me and go, wow, now I see the problem. And now I see, maybe I find a solution here. But if I see it, it's so more easier for much easier for me to deal with, do it with everything. So for me, you know, writing it down, getting it out. We used to call it burning, writing and burning way back when, where you'd write it out and then burn it. But no, we don't need to do that today.
Thank you, Cheryl. Any other questions for Cheryl?
One more question. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, this is Laura. My question is, is there an ideal number of sponsees? How do we, I know it's between us and our higher power, but do you recommend, or, you know, what is your experience on how many sponsees to work with at any given time? Thanks.
Thanks for the question. That's a very good question. It all depends on what your background is. Are you self-employed? Are you unemployed? Are you still out in the workforce? It depends on your time. I always have to be sure that I didn't overdo it and that I didn't dread that phone call or I didn't dread that time. But, oh, my goodness, here comes a call, another call. This program has to work for me on life's terms. I've got to be comfortable with it. You know, it's got to feel good. And it does if I do it the right way. And so, yes, when I had 10 sponsees, it was a bit too much. But at that point in time, my life allowed for it. I had the time. But I would think between 2 to 4 sponsees, this is my own opinion, is comfortable. And some people, they can't do any more than one. And that's perfect, too.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl. There was someone else that had another question.
Yeah, I have a question. Yeah, I was going to say, Cheryl, yeah, this is Bobby. How do you support or what do you do to support a sponsee that's really struggling with willingness or struggling with surrender?
That's a really good question. It depends what they're struggling with. Are they struggling with food? Are they struggling with a phone call? Are they struggling with working any of the tools? And then there are those cases where all of the above, I need to realize. I had a case, maybe 2 cases on my experience, is that when I had to break off the relationship, I had to let go. It was very, very, very rough on me and, of course, on the other person. I hate change. We all hate change, I think. So what happened was it was becoming too emotional for me. I couldn't deal with her. I was carrying her emotional stuff, her emotional baggage with me, and it was harming me, both physically, emotionally, and it was threatening my serenity, my abstinence. So I spoke about it with my sponsor a lot, and then I remember we met at the library, and I took her side, and I said, listen, you know, it's not about you, it's about me, but I need to change. I had set up a sponsor for her on the spot. I had the number with me. She was able to call the sponsor. Of course, it was crying and tears and all that, and I really felt bad. But she hit it off with a new sponsor the next day, and it was perfect, you know. So I needed to do that for my own serenity, for my own sanity. And so, yes, times come when we just see we can't do anything more for that person. And I just read about it, I don't have it on to quote, where if it doesn't work out with a sponsor, we need to move on and let the next person have the privilege of becoming a recovered compulsive eater. So if it's not working and I'm just hanging in there and she's not willing to do the work, first thing would be to have a serious conversation about it. And if not, then maybe it's time that, you know, you find a relationship that works.
And I'll just say this, it is in the sponsor guidelines that sponsorship is a two-way street. And any time the sponsor or sponsee are free to look for other sponsors or sponsees. One last question for Cheryl.
Yeah, this is Laura.
Thank you.
Is it up to the sponsor to then be deciding that after 30 days, maybe you should do the 30-day plan again with abstinence, or is it up to the book? Am I misunderstanding the book that you move on if you want to? Is this a sponsor call or?
Move on to what? I didn't get the question.
Move on to getting an extra grain. You know, move on to being able to do what is after 30 days.
Okay, that's you're talking about the food question. Well, number one, the food is between you, your higher power, and your sponsor. We know that, right? I Exactly, you have to decide. If your sponsor tells you you cannot add a grain and you know that you can, then there's something to really be discussed. And again, like I just mentioned before. On the other hand, for example, if someone's had a slip in their back and they don't want to do any more of the 30-day questions, or they don't want to do any more slip questions, we have to work with them. You know, I keep constantly saying that it's a program of life on life terms. So if I have someone that's really been around for a long time, I'll make up questions for them every day, or I'll get, there's so many booklets we have. The Asbel Caesar booklets, about six of them, hundreds of questions. We don't have to stay with the 30-day questions, even if you slipped or relapsed. On the other hand, if you're starting with a new sponsor and you've come back from a relapse, she may want to know your history, and that's question number one of the 30 questions, so you may want to do that. You may want to continue, if you haven't been around for a long time, to start over again with the first 30 questions, but this is all up to the discretion of your sponsor and you, what types of questions you want to do, how you want to continue on after a slip, and what questions to do after you're done with your maintenance questions and or not even maintenance if you haven't gotten there, but your traditions questions, etc. So there's a whole list of in-order type of booklets that you can get as to which ones you want to present to a sponsor. But the food thing is you need to, this is how I work. If I know that this is what I need to do in program, this is what program requires of me, or this is what program allows me to do, and I'm hearing very differently from my sponsor, I really need to stop and think about that, because it's going to create resentments. I'm going to get angry, and why is she doing this to me? She's not doing it. She may not even be realizing it. But if I don't feel comfortable, it needs to be out in the open. You know, resentments is going to make me go right back into the food. I cannot afford to have any resentments or anger or anything like that. So anytime that there's a situation with a sponsor, just speak to them. Talk about it. Talk about it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay, everybody, we're going to wrap it up.
Adele, before you stop the recording, I need to retract something I said. It was a lie. Okay, I have talked about politics and the virus before on an outreach call, so I just want to clean that up. But, it's not a healthy call because it wasn't about CA Howe. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Dale. None of us are perfect. Okay, so I just want to thank everybody. We're going to stop the recording in a minute, and if some of the panelists want to stay on, if there are more questions, we'll do that. We'll leave phone numbers. But what I want to leave you with are two things. All the literature that was read today was from conference-approved literature, and a lot of it was our own. A lot of the stuff is either in the sponsor guidelines, the service manual, or the Forever Abstinent Booklet. The Forever Abstinent Booklet comes out new and fresh every 3 years. The sponsor guidelines come out every year, and there are always changes. Some of them, sometimes it might be a small change, and sometimes there are a lot of changes or things added to the sponsor guidelines. It is recommended, highly recommended. We purchase new ones because things change. And then the service manual is a great piece of material to read. And we also did not bring in, we also have a book on sponsorship, not the sponsor guidelines, but a little book. So there's that. And so please remember, our books are to be studied just like the big book. It's not just to look at the food and put it down. There's a lot of good information in there. And I want to leave you with this. The seven tools for us are required. So when we come in, we must do them, and at some point, we get to do them. And they are a gift, they're a pearl, they're a jewel, and they're to help us grow. And if we don't grow, we go. So embrace those seven tools. And sometimes it's a little harder than other times, but we get to do them. So I want to thank everybody. I'm going to stop, we'll finish the serenity prayer, then I'm going to stop the recording. We'll give out our phone numbers. Okay, serenity prayer. And thank you, everybody, and thank you to our timers, Bea and Susie, and to all of our panelists and everybody who asked questions.
God,
grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity.
To accept the
things that I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom to know the difference.
I will.
Thy will be done.
Amen.
Amen. Thanks.